Hello everyone, my name is Ryan and you are listening to the Vegan Report. Today we are going to talk about one of the most beautiful vegan initiatives out there, the Art of Compassion Project. If you get the chance to visit their website, and there is a link in the description below, this is what you will read. The Art of Compassion Project is an international art collective, supported by over 100 artists from 28 countries that aims to support the compassionate lifestyle of veganism by donating 100% of proceeds from various art projects to non-profit vegan organizations. Through this effort, we also aim to build a strong international community of vegan artists who share the same vision to use their art as a means to spread the vegan message. To discuss this initiative, I have with me Helen Barker, an artist and the UK team leader and event coordinator of Art of Compassion Project, and Francisco Atencio, also an artist and graphic designer for the organization. Welcome to the show, Helen and Frank. Thank you so much for having accepted my invitation.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. Yeah. It's really exciting to be able to talk about the Art of Compassion Project, because it is a passion, I know, for myself, and I'm sure for Frank also. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for inviting us. It's a pleasure.
Amazing. And for disclosure, this is the second time we meet and have this conversation. The first time we had some major technical problems, and so you generously accepted to do it again, give it another try, and thank you for that. So my first question for you is, how did your path cross with the Art of Compassion Project? How did you discover the Art of Compassion Project, fell in love with the initiative, and decided to give time and effort to make it a success? Helen, let's start with you.
So I discovered the project in 2017. I was at a little gallery in London where I was actually displaying my first ever animal rights art that I'd done. And there were two members of the Art of Compassion Project doing a presentation there about the groups, and I was quite tentative about my AR art then. You know, it was my first foray into it, and I'd always done a lot of art, but I was just for myself, and I always painted and drew and sculpted animals. You know, that's my thing. I was so intrigued by this Art of Compassion. So I spoke to them both after the event, and I just thought, this sounds like a really safe space for an artist to go who wants to be active with their art. It's just the only thing you have to be to join is to be vegan. You don't even have to be a great artist or a professional or anything. They just want people who make art who are vegan. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to be at home with like-minded people here. So I joined straight away. And the other thing, which you've just mentioned in that lovely introduction, was that I was just bowled over by the fact that all of the projects raise funds for vegan initiatives, as well as kind of like working for the animals. So I just thought, this is an all-round good thing to do. So I joined, and it all went from there.
Amazing. What about you, Francisco?
Yes, in my case, it was like 2 or 3 years before. I'm one of the first members there. It was like, I don't know, like 9 or 10 years ago. I don't recall exactly, but by that time, I was painting and drawing just like a hobby. I was doing mostly pet portraits, you know, cats and dogs. And I saw a post on Facebook about the Art of Compassion, that they were looking for artists who wanted to draw or paint to spread the message of love toward animals. And they were planning to publish a book. So I thought, well, maybe this is a... It, It seems a nice thing, right? Because it was like they were calling people from all over the world. I'm from Argentina. Here in Argentina, it's not easy to speak for the animals. So it was like a way I could spread the message in a better way, you know. So I filled in the form and I sent the. By that time, I only had one picture, one painting of a cow besides cats and dogs. So I sent that photo, and that's how I started with the Art of Compassion. Then the book, they took like 2 or 3 more years to be published, but it was a great beginning because a lot of artists joined by that time. So it was not only the book, it was like the yearly calendar, a lot of exhibitions and Veggie Fest. So that first year, I don't recall, but maybe I submitted my painting for like 4 or 6 projects. And it was like a kickoff for me for start painting not only pets, but for animal rights, you know. And even to see pets in a different way. We don't call them pets anymore. They are companion animals. And it was like a breakthrough to me. I changed my way of thinking on what I eat, and to be more in the cause for animal rights. It was the like the perfect time for me. So I'm very thankful to the Art of Compassion.
Both of you have talked about, submitting art. How do you deal with the outside view of, the critical view that can come with someone who looks at a piece of art that you have worked with, in the intimacy of your home and of your mind? And I want to know how you overcame that fear of judgment from others. Frank, would you like to start?
Yes, I don't know. In my case, I draw or paint from the heart. Maybe they are not perfect, but when you have something so strong inside you that you have to let it out, you have a message to deliver, and you do it in a passionate way, the results are going to be good. Of course, not everybody is going to like them. More if you are talking, I don't know, issues like slaughterhouse or, I don't know, well, animals used in different ways, animals seen as products. There are a lot of people that get very uncomfortable with this kind of art. But we, in my case, I don't want people to feel bad. I just want to share my point of view, my way of living. And we can't, I don't know, make everybody happy. But if you do it from the heart, it's gonna be okay, and you're not going to feel down for the critics or for people that say that something shouldn't be shown, you know?
What about you, Helen? Do you think about the people who are going to see your art when you are in that creative space and painting?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree with Frank. And also, I think, like I said, I've made artwork for years and years, but for myself. And the reason it's been for myself is because I don't want to show it to people because I don't want criticism. But there's something completely different. You cross a different line when you're doing artwork that has got a really important message, because it becomes about you know you're going to get attacked by people for the message. That's a given. I don't care what people think of the artwork itself, and because they're so taken up with the message, they don't really care either. So you don't get that same feeling of having your art critiqued, because it's a piece of work that's about a really important issue. And so it's always good. It's exactly what Frank says. It's always good when you can't wait to get it out there once you've done it. Because it is, it's all the words and all the research and all the passion you've had in your heart that you've put into this piece of work. You can't wait to share that. And I never felt like that about artwork pre-animal rights artwork. Yeah, I can't wait to share a piece, and I want people to react, and I want farmers to jump on my page and have a rage at me. I want all of that. So, because that's the conversation. We need to be having the conversations. I'm not a great public speaker. I'm not great at kind of like going out on the street talking to people, or even having kind of like one-to-one conversations, really. But I can speak through my art, so I'm excited to be able to do that. So I never feel daunted about it anymore.
When I think about artists, I think about people who are very individualistic in a way, that have a big personality, and they are maybe a bit, eccentric, or they have this creative spirit to them. So how does it work to have a collective and make those big personalities work together? Is it hard?
Yeah, I've never worked in another art sphere, so I don't really know. I probably have an idea of what artists are like too, but there is something really unique about this group that there has never been anything like that. And we have a really wide range of people. We have hobbyist artists, we have professionals, literally make their living from artwork. There has never been a single sniff of that, as far as I can tell, because and it's the place it's coming from, and a lot of them make professional artwork which has nothing to do with animal rights, and they do the art of compassion stuff in their spare time, what they would call their spare time. I've never met any divas in the group. Everyone just gets it. We all submit our artwork. We all hope that it's going to be seen, and it might sell and make some money, and none of us are making any money. And quite often the artists usually pay to have the prints done for the poster shows that we do at the exhibition, so it is purely just a giving ethos, really. So yeah, I think if there are any divas, they leave that stuff at home when they come to the Art of Compassion. I wouldn't know if they were like that, because everyone is just generous and kind and sharing. Genuinely, it sounds really cheesy, but vegan cheesy.
Well, I'm hearing you talk, and you have this big smile on your face. Does it give you joy to give time and this much energy to the Art of Compassion project?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I'm the UK event coordinator is because I'm the one who always jumps up and down and puts my hand up and says, "Oh, I'll do that. I'll do that." And I just love it. I love on so many levels. Personally, I like the work. I like organizing, and I like, collating everything and organizing the event. But meeting so many people who are, I can be displaying work from sort of 100 artists. There can be 200 separate pieces of artwork from 100 artists at one of the exhibitions, and that feels like a privilege to me to be curating that. I would never have that opportunity in anywhere else in my life. So it's given me something, even though it's voluntary, and I don't even break even when I do these events, But I just love them. I would do as many as I physically could in the year, really, which isn't that many because real life gets in the way. But yeah, it is a real privilege to have that position, and to work with the volunteers and to hear people talking about the artwork and how it moves them. So you just can't get better. There's nothing like it.
Amazing. Frank, you're one of those artists that Helen talked about who does it for a living. And your journey is quite special because you were a computer engineer and you decided to put that aside to concentrate on art. So, can you tell us about your personal journey relating to art?
Yes, it's a crazy journey. But it was not from one day to the other. It was like a long journey. I was working in different offices and I don't know, full-time jobs as a software developer. And I started to feel that all my energy and all my creativity, I was giving it to people that I don't even know and people that I am just doing business. So at first, I started to attend art classes after my job was done every day, like a hobby, like a way of surviving this crazy system we live in. And I felt that I needed more than that. I started to feel that it was more than a hobby. So when I saw that that I could draw or paint I don't know, acceptable way, I decided to quit my full-time job and started a part-time job. Again, as a software developer, and started to, as I told before, I started doing pet portraits, and that was it was not a big income, but it was a way that I could, I don't know, do something that I love and earn some money. But and learn some new skills in this adventure of painting. But I felt that it wasn't enough, half a day. So, like 3 years ago, I quit my part-time job and decided to devote myself to painting, drawing, and I do some work of graphic designs. I'm a graphic designer as well. It's been amazing because when you think that you cannot, I don't know, you don't have the money for the half of the month, a new job appears, a new commission appears, and I've been doing it for 3 years, so I think I'll keep doing it for the rest of my life. I'm very grateful because I can live of what I love, and most of my work is related to animal rights. You know, I've illustrated a couple of kid books. I made a couple of illustration for vegan groups or in your case for your podcast that I love to work with you. And so yes, it's been amazing. And one thing is that I was able to do this because of my family, because they joined me in this crazy idea and they support me. And maybe we are all the time like a bit short of money, but I see my kids, they draw or paint along with me. Before that, I was all the time, I was doing homework, you know, and it was like I was all day sitting in a desk, and they come back from school and I was there. They came later and I was there. I didn't want to raise my kids in that way. I wanted them to see that his dad is doing the things that he loved, and that they can do the same. And of course we don't have we love to, I don't know, to travel more or have a newer car, but I'm happy, and I think they are happy too in this way.
People should know that you're the one who designed the logo of this podcast. Well, not the logo. It's called the cover art.
The cover art, yes.
Yes, of this show. And commenting on what you said, you know, it takes a lot of courage to pursue your passion and sacrifice your day job for what you really believe in and what you love. How old were you when you made that transition?
I started the transition like 10 years ago. It was by the time I knew the Art of Compassion project. It was, like I said before, it was an inspiration, this project. So by that time, I started to paint more related to animal rights. Yes, 10 years, and it was like 15 years from now that I think I took my first art class. I was 35 or 34 by that time, and I quit my job when I was 45. So, you know, you're never too old to make big changes to your life and to pursue your dream or to do what you love, what you really love. I did it. It wasn't easy, but I did it.
It's truly inspiring. Helen, what was it for you? How did you discover that you had this passion for art and that you wanted to pursue that?
I my two passions ever since I could walk was animals and making art, you know, making marks on things and drawing whatever animals I could find. But I never did anything with it. You know, I did art at school and I failed. So that stopped me for a little while. That's the power of criticism, you see. But I've always kept doing it for myself. And same as Frank. I did it in bits and pieces, but I've never done so much as since I joined the Art of Compassion. Frank said a lovely thing, calling it the adventure of painting. And I've just found it, that's a really interesting word, because I have found it such an adventure, learning how to do art because I wanted to do it better, because I wanted to do it better for the animals. I've taught myself different skills, actually, and done different things, you know, sculpting 3D animals and all sorts of things that I wouldn't have done before. So, yeah, it's amazing once you've got an outlet that just comes from your the center of your chest, you know, that's you. You're done then, and you'll be doing it for the rest of your life. I can't imagine doing anything different. I don't make a living from it. I make a few bags of chicken feed from it at the very most, but that's enough for me.
Yeah, because you also have a micro sanctuary.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, my seven chickens, my two sheep. my little friends who I care for, the survivors, I call them. Yeah.
And I also want to ask both of you a last question about the artist before we talk about the art and the cause. How was it in terms of the reaction of your family and friends looking at you starting this journey, this art journey, and pursuing your passion and drawing animals and getting involved with the Art of Compassion project? Let's start with you, Helen. What was the reaction of your loved ones?
Yeah, well, it's a tricky thing because my your loved ones are the hardest ones to change, aren't they? It's universally known that they're the most difficult people to persuade about veganism. You think they're going to be the easiest, and they're really not. Couldn't be further from the truth. So I think they are proud of the fact that I'm following my passion, but they have said to me, "Oh, isn't it a shame that you don't do proper art or real art?" And I say, "What do you mean?" And they say, "Well, just not that scary stuff, not that judgy stuff." And my art is not judgy. I don't do anything graphic and awful to sort of frighten people. I like to think my art is educational. Yeah, it's that disparate thing between vegans and non-vegans. So yeah, I would say the reception has not been what I wanted it to be. But you understand that because you know that your family, you loved your loved ones no matter what. And I know they're proud of me deep down. Yeah.
What about you, Frank?
In my case, well, like I said before, my family is very supportive about it. And I live like in a little place. There are like three or four houses, all relatives. And we are all vegetarian or vegan. And it's like, I don't know, like a little bubble, because outside of that is a very different world. For instance, my friends from the college or from previous office jobs, they don't get it. Why I eat the way that I eat, why I'm trying to do a living of art in Argentina. That's crazy. We are always in a deep crisis, economical crisis. And it sounds crazy. They are doing very, very well. Most of them have their jobs of software developers or engineers. Most of them, they are doing very well. They have their fancy car, and we are still friends, and we hang along. We laugh. They laugh at my meal. I when we gather for a, I don't know, for a dinner, always barbecue, of course. And I do my veggies, my vegan stuff. But it's nice because it's always an opportunity to chat about it. They are very curious of what I eat, how I'm still alive, not eating big pieces of meat, you know. And it's they're very nice, but I see that they don't get what I'm doing. But I don't know, the family support is very important. Without them, I don't know if I could have done this.
I want to now talk about the art and its importance. And I want to start by talking about how what different art you're making. And the other artists of the Art of Compassion project are making, because animals have been a subject in art since the dawn of humanity. We've drawn animals on the walls of caves, and I want to understand how you see vegan art as being different from how we portray animals, how we have portrayed animals in our culture, and what makes vegan art so special. So maybe, Helen, would you like to answer the question first?
Yes, yeah, one of my favorite subjects actually is how we've addressed our relationship with other animals. Since we first started to draw them on cave walls, if indeed that was our first foray into that, their images, not only we use their image without their consent, always, of course, they're so part of the fabric of our lives now. They are on everything. You can't buy anything without the image of an animal on there, the effigy of an animal, whether it's an insect or a bird or and they become invisible. I think they become unseen, misunderstood. They are just a two-dimensional effigy of themselves. No matter how beautiful that art is, and there is some incredibly beautiful animal art all over the world, and some of it ancient and very moving. But I think for a vegan artist or an animal rights artist, as I call myself, it's just not enough to portray them beautifully. You have to portray them with integrity and honesty, and you have to speak about their lived experiences and who they are, not what they are. And I think that's what I try to do with my art. I don't want to make pretty pictures. I want to make pictures that are well put together, but it needs to speak for the animals. So I think it's really important for us as artists to not make art about animals, but to really make sure we make it for them, because we're speaking their voice, which we don't know if we're speaking it right, but we're just trying to. We've heard the expression voice for the voiceless, which I don't feel comfortable with that, because they speak their own voices all the time. It's just that we don't understand them properly. And we don't take the time to understand them. So I think that's our job, to make people see deeper than any artwork they've ever looked at before. So those animals, become more visible to us as people, because they are just people. They're other nations. So that's our job, I think.
I get from what you said that the purpose of animal rights art is to build a bridge between us and the rest of the animal kingdom, to highlight the reality instead of exploiting that reality or their image for transmitting maybe other ideas or pursuing another message or emotion. So did I get it right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's so much more to them than even showing, graphic footage of what happens to them. I think people need to connect with them on a much deeper level than just seeing them suffer, because that's not the full picture. The full picture is they have really rich emotional lives. All of them, the tiniest fishes in the sea, the insects, everyone. And that's, I think, what we need to somehow get across in our artwork. And I think, we need to try and draw that empathy out of people. It's a real challenge, actually. I think that's why I'm not very prolific in my art, because I spend a lot of time on the nuances of, I'm thinking about my audience all the time when I'm making a piece of work. And of course, my audience have a completely different mindset to me. So it's a challenge to come up with a piece that it already speaks to you, so you don't have a problem with it, but you've got to think about how it presents. Say I'm drawing a pig. I'm working for the pig as far as I'm concerned. I'm like their lawyer or something, so I don't want to misrepresent them, because that my job is to represent them correctly. So that's how I feel like when I'm making work. And it feels like a challenge. It really does. It's one we relish, obviously, but I think we really need to think about getting it right.
You made a comment, and I want to get back to it. In the animal rights movement, we tend to promote visuals of animals suffering, for instance, footage of animals inside of slaughterhouses. Are we using those images maybe too much or too freely? Is it harming in any way the animal rights cause to put the accent on those kinds of images and portrayals of animals? What I'm thinking about right now is Oxfam. I volunteered for Oxfam for many, many years, and one of the employee there told me once, we used to use a lot of pictures of people suffering, hungry and destitute in refugee camps, and that would get a lot of traction, and we would get lots of money, fundraising using those images. But we realized that there was a bad side to it, that we were taking away the humanity of those people, showing them as victims when they were more than that. And that portrayal was actually, in a way, harmful. And so we started thinking of balancing the way we visualize and to show people in poor countries with a smile and with dignity and not in the worst state they're in. So what would you have to say about that?
Yeah, it is a tricky one to answer, and I've listened to lots of debates about it and
Yeah.
lots of arguments about it. I really like the Oxfam analogy, actually, even though it's slightly different for humans, because we can empathize with them straight away because they are our species. We understand them. People don't empathize with animals, other animals, in the same way, because they don't have any concept of the fact that they have the same feelings. So I think portraying violent images of what human animals go through and other animals, it does have a nuanced difference to it. But I absolutely I would never I would personally never show something that was really graphic suffering, for that exact reason. I don't want to portray them as victims. I would rather speak about their similarities to humans, how they suffer, how they feel joy and love, and they have families who they care for. I would rather lift them up to what people think is something that is only particular to humans. I would rather lift all animals up to that same status than to make them look like victims of humans, to portray their potential. So I dare say there is a place for it. I think I know people who have turned vegan because they saw those things, and you can't argue with that. But I think, like anything else, it has to be a balance. And I think if it's balanced out with lots of other ways to be active for animals, then perhaps it works. We're never going to be perfect. We've got to try everything that we can in the toolbox. But sometimes I even think there's too much of it on social media. But that's maybe just my particular choice of what I'd like to see and not. Yeah.
Well, what about you, Frank? What is your take on this whole issue? What makes animal rights art different? And what is, I guess its place in the world of art?
Yes, I agree with all that Helen said. It's not easy to find a balance in what we should show about animals if they show them suffering or enjoying life. In my case, I try to always show them in a happy way, in a happy place. Like Alan said, like Helen said, in a way that people can see that animals share with us a lot of things, that animals enjoy life, that they want to live, that they will fight to be alive. And but if you see my artwork, the in most of the cases they are happy. And another message that I try to deliver through my art is that we are a part of nature. We are not owners of nature. We are not allowed to use nature for our benefit. That we have to learn to live with nature and in nature and to share this beautiful world with the rest of the animals and the trees and all of the wonderful things we have. That's another thing that I try to show through my art. Returning to your question, I think it's quite new what we are trying to do, to use art with a message from the animals. Like Helen said, not to paint animals, but to speak for them. And I think I don't know if it is done before because art, it's been always about mankind, talking about their beliefs or their culture or their gods. But now we're taking art to a different place. It's quite new and it's very, very, very nice. I'm very happy to see there are a lot of artists doing this these days. And not only painting, you have a lot of singers now or actors that are talking. They are giving voice to animals. We have a lot of movies now. The other day I was watching with my daughter. She's 9 years old. I was watching Chicken Run with her, and she loves that movie. And it's very the message that they deliver. It's very strong. They show chickens with personality, with names. They are individuals. They are very different. They enjoy life. They fight. They argue with each other. But then when they come up with a plan to save. At the beginning, they're trying to save one little chicken, but at the end, they ended up saving all the chickens they can. It's very nice to see that kind of art in popular media,
Art can also be used to promote the opposite message. And I'm talking here about animal exploitation. And when I go grocery shopping and I pass next to the egg aisle and the milk aisle, I see lots of images, drawing, beautiful drawing of cows and chickens living happily. And that is all used to hide a truly disgusting and horrifying reality, and to make it more, make those products more attractive to consumers, to make them forget where those products really come from. And I guess you are, in a way, competing against that art, competing against that message. So I want to get your opinion on that kind of art. Frank, what is your reaction to those kinds of drawings when you go grocery shopping, or when you encounter an ad on TV or things like that?
Yes, I love to punch them in the face, but I cannot. It's disgusting, but I usually go shopping or to the grocery with my kids. It's not a nice thing, but at the same time, it's an opportunity to speak about it, you know, to show them that that's not the truth, that the truth is that animals suffered a lot to be there. Of course, I don't show my kids footage of slaughterhouse or things like that, but I let them know that that's not the truth. The happy cows and pigs running in a green field, they don't live like that, I told them. So it is what it is. It's going to be there for a long time. The only thing that we can do is that it's encouraging us to paint or to work more for the animals and to speak about it, not only with the kids, but I don't know, with friends, telling the band, did you believe these lies? Take the, I don't know, the positive part of this. Of it. It's like an excuse to talk about it.
What about you, Helen? How can artists like you and Frank support that kind of message and participate in making that kind of art for such, you know, bloodthirsty industries?
Yeah, another one of my favorite subjects, you know, as far as my art's concerned, is that I do try to make artwork that tips that on its head. Of course, that's as much as in the climate movement, we know about greenwashing, and we now have this term humane washing, which is exactly what you're talking about when you talk about the happy egg packages and the lovely happy pictures of cows eating grass, you know, which, as we know, is all a complete fallacy. But that's in the human psyche. That's why people think that it's okay, because they're all treated humanely and they must be having a great time and nothing bad happens to them ever. And then their lives are ended and it's fine. So our work has to turn that on its head. So I love to use that, and I've done quite a bit of artwork about making my own little, drawing, you know, fake meat packages with that look just like a meat packet, but they've got a picture of the animal inside the packet with their face looking out, and it's got just some truth about who they are on the packet. So I actually directly tried to address that with some of my work, to kick out the humane washing. But yeah, that's pretty much what we're doing, isn't it? We're trying to turn all of those narratives that we've all been brought up with since we were kids. We're trying to turn those narratives on their head and That's a big job because there's a lot of them, isn't there? There's just we are bombarded with it. And if you think we've got to make a counterpiece for everything that we see, yeah, it's a good job. There's more of us all the time because there's a lot of work to do.
Talking about those narratives, there is the fact, the weird fact, fascinating fact in a way, that animals are used as insults in our language. And how can we take individuals and living creatures and reduce them to basically an insult? My question is really, first of all, why? How come we got there? And also, can you concretely give an example of what you did to break away some of those animals from their prison of metaphorical prison, from their prison of meaning that we have imposed on them? Maybe starting with you, Helen.
Yeah, the language is so interesting, and even when you've been vegan a long time, you can suddenly find yourself say using a term, not like a very negative one, but even just sick as a dog. It's not something we should, we shouldn't be using them as a yardstick for being sick. Yeah, and again, like we're indoctrinated, aren't we, into that's in our language. It's in our language, and it's very hard to even shift it in yourself when you know that is speciesist language. So it's kind of it's in. I think you have to find it in yourself first, and then think, oh, okay, I need to stop doing those things myself. I have made some artwork that challenges it, but it's a tricky one. It's a really tricky one to perform with art. I dare say maybe you could written word is better because I've really struggled to represent it visually in a piece of artwork, but I try never to use it, and I correct people all the time, and I do it kindly. I'm trying to make people realize, whether they're vegan or non-vegan, that language is old school. It's inappropriate now, and I think the more that I can do that, the more people are gonna, it's just gonna sink in. But it's that, oh, that's a long journey. That's a really long journey. But yeah, making I'm still working hard on making art to challenge that without using words. Yeah. So I'll let you know when I've come up with something. You'll be the
Yes, please.
first to hear.
What about you, Frank? What is your opinion on the topic?
Yes, we have in Spanish a lot of words related to animals in a bad sense, in a bad way. It's a cultural thing, but I don't know. I try to correct my kids when they use it. For instance, it's always very common to say that someone is a pig when they are, I don't know, very dirty. And I try to teach them that pigs, in fact, they are very, very clean in nature. We seem dirty in farms because they don't live the way nature intended for them. In nature, they have their place to sleep. They have their place to bath in mud to refresh themselves, and they have another place to make pee and poop, But in a farm, they don't have space. They have to do everything in those tiny, tiny cages or spaces. Again, I try to find a way to turn that bad thing in a, I don't know, in a positive way, to try to learn first myself things, and then try to teach something to the people that I care.
You know, in our case, Frank, you're the one who made the cover art for the Vegan Report, and we see there a pig. And, you know, at first I was hesitant to adopt it as cover art because there was an image of a pig on that cover art. And that was surprising to me. Even after so many years of being vegan, celebrating now 9 years, I still had that feeling of uncomfortable, being uncomfortable and you know, uneasy with having a pig representing a project I'm passionate about, because pigs are dirty, pigs are insults, pigs are even perverted. You know, that's what I associate with pigs. And at the end, I chose that cover art for that very reason, because I felt uneasy with that art, because it made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? It is really interesting. The last piece of artwork I did, which was for the Art of Compassion last year, we were doing a submission for the London show, which was all about the marine world, and because fishes are so unrepresented, and I wanted to do a piece about bycatch. You've heard of bycatch is all the little people in the sea that get caught, and they're not the target species. So I was researching bycatch, and I realized I was doing a really speciesist thing, because I was looking at the sort of the megafauna and the really iconic species, or the protected species, you know, seals or whales or sharks. You know, the numbers are horrific. And then I thought, what am I doing? This is about the fishes. That's a much bigger number of individuals. even myself at this late stage in my 27 years vegan, I was still being speciesist myself. So that was so interesting to me to discover that. And I ended up doing a piece about the fishes who are caught in the nets, and not the bycatch. But it's a challenge, but it's good. We're here to challenge each other, and that's why it's good to talk about it, isn't it? Sparks those little things in your brain that make you change and make you be better. And that, you know, that language is used to distance ourselves from animals, and I suppose our language is art, and we're using it to bring them closer to us, and try and undo some of that that indoctrination that we've had since the agricultural revolution. Probably 10,000 years ago, we've been using language to distance animals from us. So yeah, we've got an uphill struggle.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Helen, because it makes me feel better.
I genuinely was fascinated by it. And it really spurred me to do a really complicated piece with lots of little fishes in, instead of, you know, so beautiful shark. Yeah, so it was good for me. It was a good poke for me.
Frank, are you also surprising yourself being a speciesist in your outlook sometimes?
Yes, we are always learning. For the cover art for the postcard, some inside information that the pig was there at first for a mistake, because I was trying to make like a background with the silhouette of many farm animals. I have the cow, the calf, some ducks there. And I was looking for a reference image of a pig, and I put it there, and it was so big that it covered the whole screen. And I thought, that's it. This is a strong image. The pig, the little piggy on front, looking at the viewers and telling us, hey, I'm here, I'm happy, because it's a It's an image of a free pig, a piglet, but he's been in a slaughterhouse. He's been freed from there. And I'm very glad you liked it, because when I saw that image, I thought it was the one that I was looking for. And thankfully, you liked it a lot.
It's a really joyful image. I just love it. It's one of those things you could easily see like on a meat packet, you know. That's the tragic thing, but it isn't. It's a real story about joy, and that's just a beautiful image. Yeah, love it.
Yeah. Thanks, Helen.
There is the detail of the ear tag, and you know, the ears being you know, cut, and you know, I wanted that as a little reminder of where that pig came from, which he escaped. And on the ear tag, there is the number 100. And it's also, you know, a clue to tell people, you know, there are 99 other pigs that are stuck in that nightmare. So, yeah, I did love the image. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
So I want to talk about something we mentioned at the beginning, something you participated in, Frank, which is the Art of Compassion book, which is a compilation, a collection of some of the most beautiful animal rights artwork out there, which is available for order on Amazon. Helen, can you tell us a little bit about that book and how we can get it?
Yeah, the book is you know, probably the crowning glory, really, because that was when Lee set up The Art of Compassion. It was just with a view to making a book. And I think she got so overwhelmed with so many artists joining and realized that it wasn't just going to be a little tiny pamphlet, it was going to be a big book. That's when all the other projects came to light, and it's actually kind of helped The Art of Compassion to grow to much more than a book. But the book has, I can't remember, I should have looked it up, but it has a phenomenal amount of images in it. It's beautiful, beautiful, heavy book. You can only buy it through Amazon at the moment. The reason for that, even though Amazon has its issues, as many of us know, was that it was going to just cost so much money to present a book with that much artwork in that had good enough quality printing, to print like colour on every single page. It would have been prohibitive. And the Art Compassion is a non-profit. You know, we don't make any money. So there wasn't funds to do it. And Amazon was the only place that came up with that you could buy it and print on demand. So it was quite an easy thing to do. It took a long, long time. And I think it's only been out 4 years, or maybe it came out 2019. That's another thing I forgot to look up. So my apologies. So yeah, it did take quite a lot of years to put together, but it's got poetry in it. It's got personal stories from artists and just such a huge range of artwork. There's really, really something for everyone. And it doesn't have a lot of graphic stuff in, so it makes a really good coffee table book as well. You know, you can leave it out and think it's really going to touch people rather than offend people is how I view it. So yeah, it's a masterful little piece of work, yeah, you can buy it on Amazon in most countries, I think, actually. Yeah, so I think it even has its own website, which you can link through the Art of Compassion Project website, so have a look.
Yes, I ordered the book, and I'm looking forward to getting it. I'm truly excited to open it and discover the many images that myself transported by their stories. Looking also at the contribution of Frank in the book. I don't know if you also contributed, Ellen, to the book.
Frank and I are actually next to each other in the book. I think
Oh,
first
yeah.
ever. So yeah, funny thing. Yeah.
What a coincidence.
We were, and I was quite early on in my Art of Compassion journey as well. So there is another book actually, in the wings, but the wings are deep. So I think the book may be some years off, but yeah, there's a lot of new artists joined since that book came out and some phenomenal artwork. And I think, you know, we've probably all changed our styles since then. So yeah, a lot of exciting stuff still to come. So there'll be an Art of Compassion too one day.
That's amazing news. And I recommend listeners to get the book, the first edition, and look forward for the second edition in the coming years. And there is a link in the description below to Amazon if you want to get the book, to make yourself that gift. There is also something I want to mention, a card, a collection of cards. It's called Oracle, I think. And I'm also getting that because when I do meetings at work, I like to start with quotes. And the beautiful thing about those cards is that you have vegan animal rights art. And then behind the card, there is an uplifting message. And I love starting a meeting at work, with an uplifting quote. So I will be using that.
That's a lovely idea, actually.
Yes.
Really nice. Yeah, they have all got beautiful little messages on the back. And the artwork is so diverse as well. It's just a beautiful, colourful little collection. Even if you, obviously people use it for spiritual kind of readings, but it's just a beautiful little, it's like a little book in itself. Yeah. So that's a nice little gift for somebody. Yeah.
Frank, is there an exhibition or any project that you're working on with the Art of Compassion project and you might want to share with us?
I try to participate in every project that I can. This year, it's been very, very hard for me to be up to date with the Art of Compassion, but I try to participate in as many as project, and of course I want to be in the coming book. I don't know when it's coming, but I'm sure I'll be there. It takes time to make such a beautiful book as it is. When when Lee Sander, the founder of the Art of Compassion, she's a genius. When she came up with the idea of the book, it took like 3 or 4 years for the book to be published. And there were a handful of people that get very stressed about that and very, I don't know, very nervous. And they left the project. But good things takes time, you know? So we have to be patient. Yes, of course, I'll be there.
Great.
Yeah, I don't think Lee realized at the time how time consuming the editing would be.
Yes,
because there's as well as artwork, there's people's personal stories which are really beautiful. They're very moving actually, and there's poetry and. I don't think any of us realize what a monster job it is to put a book together. So, and the logistics of trying to find someone to publish as well. It's not that easy. Most people who've written amazing books, if you ask them how long worked on it, they would say, just a decade. And the lady who edits the book, she's had to take 2 years out for sort of personal reasons. So that's why we had to put it on hold a bit, but it will happen.
And I want to say thank you to Lee Sanders for all of her commitment. She wasn't able to make this interview. She's the founder of the Art of Compassion Project. And I wanted to, let's maybe highlight her implication and her commitment and the great work she has done.
Ah, oh, she's incredible. I mean, really, she is such a powerhouse. She comes up with new project ideas all the time, you know, as well as her own life. And hers is all voluntary and sort of self-funded. You know, she's brought together this incredible family. And there's really nothing like it. There's nothing like it around the world. There's lots of vegan artists in all over the world, and not all of them are in the Art of Compassion. But yeah, she's done something incredible, and she's just got such positive vibes, and she's compassionate and just full of love for everybody. Yeah, and her ideas are off the scale. Some things, you know, you have to say to her, Lee, that's just not going to be possible. You know, we're just a few little artists, but she just always comes up with them. She's amazing, and I have so much to thank her for. I wouldn't be here. My art would not be where it is now without the opportunities she's given me. So yeah, thanks, Lee.
Would you like to add something to what Helen said, Frank?
No, she said it all. Yeah, she's amazing. She's inspiring. And I was thinking that many times we think, me alone, I cannot do a difference in this, I don't know, crazy world. But you can make a difference. You can inspire others. Maybe you can, I don't know, if you cannot draw or paint, you can inspire people by a song or writing or speaking. Like Lee Sanders, we all can do a difference. We all can inspire people. Maybe not a lot of people, but if every one of us could inspire a handful of people, things will be very different.
Yeah, I think she really tapped into something, kind of bringing it into being a collective like this, especially an international collective, because we bring so many different cultures and so many different kinds of artwork. And I think that just makes us all stronger together. It gives the art real gravitas when people can go to an exhibition or look at a book, and every piece of incredible artwork in there is saying the same thing, really. It's saying we've got to stop doing this to animals. Look who they are, you know. And that's a wonderful thing. That's why I say no one else is doing this with art, really. That's this little lady in Spain has just really sparked something. Well, may it continue.
So to maybe end this conversation on an uplifting message, what would you have to say to the passive vegans out there? How do we inspire them to become the next Lee Sanders, the next Helen, the next Frank, and to do some more for the animal rights cause? So what would be your message? Let's start with you, Helen.
Yeah, it is a hard one to answer. I mean, we meet countless people at events, you know, and they say, oh, I really want to join, you know. I think this is, you know, they've been a bit too nervous about doing activism, and they see this as a part of activism. And sometimes they join and sometimes they don't. And we never know what people's personal stories are. But I really think that as the more we know about our subject, and our subject is all the other animals, and there are, it's crazy that we have humans and then we have animals where there's endless species. You know, we shouldn't really just call them animals, especially because we're animals too. It's like there's this great divide that we've created. But yeah, if you feel particularly empathetic towards a species of animal, like if you went vegan because you saw you found out about chickens, you know what really happens with chicken eggs, is to just get out there and know your subject, learn a lot about your subject, read, listen to podcasts, you know, watch people, online talking about them, And not only are you going to meet lots of people in that sphere who are going to really encourage you to kind of do something about the fact that you're developing this empathy for them, you're just going to learn more. And I think just learning more gives you, I think it opens your empathy up. We can all grow our empathy. We've all got it, but I really believe we can all grow it and just keep growing it and growing it and growing it. And I think, yeah, knowing your subject really, really well helps you to find people who are fighting. Then you can join them, and then you're away. And it's kind of happens organically. Well, it did to me anyway. Finding other vegans, that's the key. You've got to have support. You've got to have that support around you.
Incredible. Yes, like this conversation and the way it has, you know, connected us, and the pleasure we have talking with each other right now.
Learning from each other, even today, you know, it's so nice to have learned things, yeah.
So, Frank, what is your message?
First of all, I've never met a passive vegan. We are very noisy. We are annoying. No, but
I agree with that.
But if there are passive vegans out there, I would say to them that just for being vegan, they are already doing a lot, you know. They are saving a lot of water for the way they are eating. They are saving a lot of land, and most important, they are saving lives, you know. So that's not passive. But if you want to do more, you can do more. There are a lot of people that say, I don't have any talent. I cannot draw like you draw or paint. But I think we all have talents, maybe hidden talents. We all have wonderful talents to be discovered. It's a matter of, I don't know, to speak with yourself, to stop from the daily rush, and to be honest with yourself, and say, well, maybe I cannot draw, but I know how to cook. Maybe I can show what I cook as a vegan, and maybe inspire others. Or maybe you are good at speaking, as you can see. I'm not good at speaking.
No, you are.
You are.
You
are.
Yes, I'm trying. I'm not good at speaking in Spanish. Imagine in English. It's not easy, but maybe it's a matter of practice, like everything. Find your talent, work hard on it, and show it to the world. We all have something to say, or to, I don't know, maybe you can't say anything, but for instance, maybe you are an athlete or a bodybuilder, and you can show that to the world, that you can be totally healthy on a vegan diet. Or maybe you can write a song about it. There's a lot of things to do. So that's it. Find your talent, work hard on it, and spread the message.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's that, definitely. I used to think that I didn't know what to do with activism, and that's why I say it happens organically. Everyone's got something, haven't they? And I really do believe I have this great hope that younger people will come up with activism we haven't even dreamt of yet.
Yes,
they'll come up with creative ways to be active. It's incredible what young people are coming up with, and a lot more younger people are getting it these days as well. I think young people are definitely like Frank's lovely children. You know, they are definitely the future of it. As Frank said in our last interview, that the sound was a bit funny. So that was, I'm stealing Frank's words there from the last time we met. That yeah, his children are the future, and I think young people, yeah, we've got big hopes for them to do things that are going to blow our minds with how amazing they are for animals. So yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Helen, Frank, thank you so much for having accepted my invitation a second time. You're true champions, and truly you're inspiring. Your work is inspiring. I'm looking forward to discovering your art in the Art of Compassion book. And yeah, you're welcome to come back anytime you want on this show. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Thank
Ryan.
you. And if you need a third time, we'll be glad to be here. Don't worry.
Don't jinx it,
Third time lucky. Well, we both managed to make it this time,
okay?
despite the daylight savings messing us around. So,
Yes, I'm gonna miss these conversations on Saturdays,
yeah, I know. We might be even better next week.
Well, like I said, you're welcome anytime
Oh,
back
no,
on the
it's been a
show.
real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Truly, it
Thank
was.
you,
Yes.
Ryan.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.